Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors that we'd like to mention before we start. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listen to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.
The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Bright Side Chat.
My man!
What's up, DJ?
I got such an I'm trying to do something a little bit more to get a little more enthusiasm out of you when I walk into your store.
How to make, you know, I'm happy the second I see that door open and your smiling face walk through the door.
No, don't lie. It's not my face. You just think it's a customer. That's gonna pay.
It's the cha-ching. It's the smile. It's your smiling wallet that I like.
Yeah. No cha-ching this week. Too slow on the books, right?
Yeah. Like we mentioned briefly last week, and we'll just touch on it very quickly and move on. But yeah, there's really only a couple of releases that came out this week. Nothing really worth speaking about as far as FOC or speculator stuff, but. We did get new number one issues of X-Force and Superior Spider-Man, and Fantastic Four number 6 is the big wedding issue with Ben Grimm and Alicia. So if you're looking for some new books to read this week, go out and pick those up. That's really about all that came out. So,
all right, cool. Yeah, we can dedicate the whole week to Aquaman because I think it's worth it.
Yeah, there you go.
Hence my greeting. So what'd you think of Jason Momoa?
I thought he did a great job. You know, it seems like he really embraced the role of Aquaman, and in spirit was Aquaman. A little bit more carefree than you see him in the comics, but I think overall you could tell he really was enjoying playing the character, and it translated on screen to me, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. Obviously, on screen and off screen, he's just been unbelievable. Like, just whether you want to call it a great sport or he's just really embracing the role. But right. You see him promoting this all over the world, and he's just an unbelievable person, really, the way he's acting and his enthusiasm for the role. But you said,
well, he sort of reminded me of, you know, if you kind of go across the street to the Marvel, cinematic universe, he seems like the Chris Evans and Chris Pratt of the DC movies, because, you know, they're always out there and you could tell they really enjoy those characters and they get a kick out of, you know, really promoting them all over the place. And as far as the DC goes, he's the only one, really. I mean, you have Gal Gadot, and she did a great job with Wonder Woman, but you don't see the others out as much, you know, kind of promoting as you did Jason Momoa. He, like I said, he really... Now, one could say, you know, if I was a skeptical kind of guy, one could just say, you know, he's trying to get his movie to make a lot of money, but... I don't think that's the case, really. I mean, I think he really, you know, legitimately enjoyed it and wants people to go out and see it and wants people to have a good time. So,
right. And I think the other thing is, I think they're trying to, and he's trying to, he's really embracing this role and trying to change the image of Aquaman. Because up until a year ago, people, you know, maybe a little bit more than that. Him in Justice League, he changed it a little bit, but people were like, it was such a, I don't want to say it was a cameo in Justice League, but it wasn't really fleshed out in that movie. But
right,
he up until then, the idea of Aquaman was kind of a joke. I mean, everybody says it, everybody knows it. And I started to look into, like, why is it a joke and what happened? And the quickest thing the easiest version I found was Super Friends. Super Friends is what caused it. And a lot of people became familiar with Aquaman, myself included, through the Super Friends. And if you weren't a comic book reader and then learn more about him later, that's all you knew. And it seems like that's where the perception of Aquaman came from.
Well, and that's what I wanted to say about that, is that he only had that reputation or that perception among people that don't really read comic books. Or even to some degree, people that read comic books but haven't taken the time to read any Aquaman comic books. Because I've been a fan of the character. I've really started picking him up and reading him heavily with the New 52, Geoff Johns run I don't know, what was that, like 7 years ago now, probably. And I read all of that New 52 run right into Rebirth, and I started reading it. And I know it might sound like I say this a lot about a lot of different characters, but Aquaman is truly one of the books that I look forward to reading the most every time it comes out. Like, I really enjoy there's so much
depth.
How do I want to say it? Like, intrigue, like political. It's very political. You know, you really get that. You know, he's a king, so it's like you have that type of storyline that undercuts, you know, just the monster of the week or the villain of the week that you get in comic books a lot. But it seems like there's more weight to the things that he's dealing with as a character, because he has a, like I said, he has a whole kingdom to rule, and he's trying to broker this relationship between, you know, his kingdom and the surface people, which are also his people. And that's more than just a guy that goes around riding on the backs of dolphins and talking to fish.
Yes.
There really is a lot to that character. And I, like I said, I really enjoy reading those books. So I've been a huge fan of Aquaman, even to the point where, I don't know if you read any of that New 52 Aquaman run, but even in the first couple of issues of that series, they poked fun at the fact that, you know, he knew he was considered the joke. You know, everybody kind of, they embraced that image of him and got it out of the way right off the bat.
Owned it and then lived, you know, just went with it from there.
Right. You see this. I was just going to say, you see in this movie, but you also see it if you read the comics. Like, this is a guy that can stand toe to toe with, you know, some of the heavy hitters, you know, Superman, Wonder Woman. He's a very powerful character. And like I said, the old Super Friends cartoons, they just didn't do him justice. It's almost like they don't know what to do with him. Because they didn't want to have all their stories taking place in the water, so...
Well, not only
that... He was just kind of the guy that had to swim from one place to the other, and then...
I feel like the Super Friends, it wasn't just the water that they didn't want to always have to go to. It was... They didn't want the storylines. His storylines back then were pretty dark, too. You know, you're talking... I mean, his son getting killed... him and Mira separate, you know, there was a lot of stuff that you're not going to delve into on a Saturday morning cartoon. So it almost makes me wonder, like, why did they include him? But I think because Aquaman is Aquaman, and he's genuinely the fourth of, like, the, well, Super Friends or, you know, Justice League.
Well, right, but you have the Trinity, and then you know. I guess you could argue
Green Lantern.
You argue there, right, between Green Lantern, Flash, and Aquaman, like, who's, like, number four? I guess they're all kind of co-number fours, you know. Yeah. But he's right there on the outside of the, you know, like the Trinity is always going to be the A team.
Yeah,
right?
So is it
even
almost
though
like...
Batman
so
doesn't
I got
stand
one for
power, you know, in the power level department, Batman doesn't stand shoulder to shoulder with any of them. You know,
no, but he's the brains.
Obviously,
the
he's got... Right. I mean, obviously, he's got his place, and, you know, Batman's my favorite character, so I'm not going to disparage him, but, you know, he doesn't stand shoulder to shoulder with Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, or Flash, or Green Lantern, you know, when it comes to that, so...
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. So, do you have, like, the original Trinity in Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and then you have maybe... the second trinity of Aquaman, Flash, and Green Lantern?
Right, I would
that,
say.
You know what I mean? That's your... And then after that, everybody's, you know... I mean, who do you throw in after that?
Well, you've got, you know... You've got Martian Manhunter, who wasn't a founding member of the Justice League, but he's been with the team, you know, for 40-plus years. I mean, and,
right.
And again, arguably... a very powerful, maybe more powerful than any of them, you know, when you look at everything he can do, you know, just the ability to implant something in your mind that could incapacitate you can take down, I don't care how strong you are, you know. You've seen with Superman and Supergirl, you know, when they have that, the orchid on them and they are kind of stuck in their dream world, and Martian Manhunter could make you do that pretty much all day, every day, so...
So...
But I guess we digress a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, so, what movie were we talking about again?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Well, we just wanted to make sure he got his place. Like I said, he should have his place. Like, Aquaman is...
Right,
like
so...
I said, he's a founding member of the Justice League, and he's a very powerful character, so he's not the joke that most people seem to think he is.
Right.
You know, Like I said, you see him on, like, Family Guy or Robot Chicken and some of these other things where they perpetuate that stereotype and make fun of him, and that doesn't help his cause any.
Right.
But,
right, and any of his critics, like, right now, probably are people, like you said, that don't, they're not as familiar with him, and so they're surprised by the, you know, bulletproof and, you know, stuff like that in that is pretty common in the Aquaman lore.
So honestly, if nothing else, you know, like it or love it, and we haven't gotten into, you know, what the perception of this movie is overall, but like it or love it, like that stereotype now is kind of fallen away. Because even if you don't like the movie, now you've seen this character in all his glory, basically.
Right,
you know,
which gets into
you should be aware that he's not, you know, he's not this joke of a character.
Right, and that gets into our original point starting out is that it's changing the culture of Aquaman. And Jason Momoa has done, you know, a great job of doing that even before the movie came out. And then when you see the movie and it's just more of the same, and we'll get into more later in spoilers about some of the stuff, the visuals that we saw, and and I already talked a little bit about it, but yeah, the overall feel of Aquaman, I think to make another one, I can't wait for another one. I honestly like can't wait for another one. I hope they do, and with the money that they're making right now on this, I think they'd be foolish not to.
Well, I can't imagine that they won't make another one. I mean, this movie is. It is doing really well. It is being received. You know, everything has its critics, and not everybody loves it, but the overall reception to this movie has been positive. And again, without getting into too many spoilers, you know, there are some post-credit scenes that lead you to believe that, you know, there's another movie on the horizon. So,
yeah.
I think we'll definitely see an Aquaman 2, you know.
Yeah,
a couple years. I mean, obviously there'll be some wait in between, but
so it feels like so far. Like I thought, you know, Wonder Woman was a great movie, and obviously there's a second one that's coming, and
right
now you have Aquaman, and well, I don't know. Do you want to get into it? Which one would you rank higher? out of the two.
I still like Wonder Woman more.
Really?
I do. I really liked Wonder Woman a lot, so I still like it, I think, a little more, but Aquaman was a little more fun, for sure.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
More of an adventure. It was more of an adventure than Wonder Woman was. Like, Wonder Woman had its very, you know, it was set in World War One, and it had, you know, a darker tone to it. And
dare we say.
Right. Well, not just visually, you know, darker because you know, you're in the trenches of World War One, and you know, obviously, in you know, we're not talking about Wonder Woman right now, but I mean, you know, when they were on Themyscira, you know, it wasn't dark at all. I mean, you had a, and we, you know, a lot of bright.
Yeah, but visually,
overall, the movie wasn't
But visually, it wasn't dark, but the outlook was. Like, all of the characters on Themyscira were like, dire. Like, they were like, oh, well, she's going to have to bat. You know what I mean? It didn't have that fun feel. What do you think about this analogy? Like, Wonder Woman was like the Christopher Nolan Batmans of the DCEU. You know what I mean? It had that. It was a it was a really good movie. It got a little bit more comic bookish at the end.
Yes, that it did, last, and that was, you know.
And that's fine. That's, you know, that was great. But it the movie from beginning up until that point was more of a movie. Whereas I felt Aquaman was like a really good comic book movie, really brought to life, a real good adventure and a lot of fun. You know, Wonder Woman had some, it had humor, but it was like, that ignorant humor where she doesn't know certain things. So we, the audience, gets to laugh because she doesn't understand certain things. You know what I mean? That uncomfortable, like, oh, she doesn't know. Whereas Aquaman had intentional humor. It had unintentional humor. It, you know, it starts off, you know, well, we'll get into that in spoilers, but it had, I thought it was just, that's why I would put it above Wonder Woman, because I just thought it was that much more fun. Now, ask me a year from now, after because I've seen Wonder Woman so many times, maybe a year from now, after I've, you know, when I get the Blu-ray and I watch it, you know, 20 times, maybe I'll be like, oh, okay, Wonder Woman is a better movie. But right now, I'd say Aquaman was, you know, to me, it's just a much more fun movie to watch.
Right. Well, like I said, I don't disagree with that. I still, like I said, I think my preference, knowing how I felt when I walked out of Wonder Woman, also kind of comparing it to how I felt with this one, I just think I liked it a little bit better. But that's not a knock on either one of them.
Right. Oh, yeah. By me saying I like Aquaman better, I'm not knocking Wonder Woman. I mean, I felt the same way when we walked out. I also felt when we walked out of Wonder Woman a sigh of relief, because I feel like I liked the earlier movies as well. I liked Justice League. I liked, well, that came
right,
after.
But you felt like they needed something to be
needed
good.
They needed a win. They were like, the DCEU was like the Cleveland Browns of movies. And it was like, yay, we got a win with Wonder Woman, you know? Even though I liked it and I was enjoying their movies, but you just want other people to enjoy them too, so maybe, you know, you don't look like a fool as much, but oh well.
Well, right, but then can't you say the same about this? Because then we had Justice League, and everybody hated Justice League. So now you're going into this one with the exact same feeling. It's like, look, they need a win.
Right.
Like, they have to get something. So,
but
you know, you walked out of this one with a sigh of relief, too, to some degree, I would say, because
I feel like they're doing a good job on the singles, like the single character movies. And where they, and I don't think they dropped the ball, but I think where people, I just think they did it differently than the MCU, where they gave you that Justice League movie before you had fleshed out all the characters. Right. So it's a different way of doing it. You and I have talked about that in the past. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just different. But I think people are like, you know, the expectations are very high going into these things. So I think that hurts them. But I'm looking forward to a Flash movie. Hopefully we get that. Right. I don't necessarily need a Batman movie. We've had so many of them. I don't need another Superman
movie. Well,
we've
talked about that too. But I think what made both of these, you know, if you look at the two movies that quote unquote were successful, which was Wonder Woman and Aquaman, the things that they both had in common is that they definitely established through, what's the word I'm trying to think of? They established that they were part of that Justice League world. But once that establishment, once that connection was made, that was it. There was no real other mention of it. There was no cameo. Batman didn't pop up. Superman didn't pop up. Wonder Woman didn't pop up in Aquaman. It was just like, it was kind of like the Netflix shows, you know, the Netflix Marvel shows with relation to the movies. Like, you know, you just have a, oh, well, we're talking about the incident. And, like, that was it. You just had this little reference back to tying them together, but then they stood on their own. And I think that's what Aquaman and Wonder Woman both did.
Right.
You know, Mira mentions to him, hey, remember when we did this just a few months ago with the Justice League? But then that was it. Like, nothing.
Right. Yeah. You took down Steppenwolf, and now I need your help here, too. I need you to save the ocean.
So, and I don't know if that has to be their recipe on everything going forward, because I still would like to see them get back to having an integrated universe with all these characters, just like Marvel's doing. And I would love to see that with DC. If we don't get it, I'm okay. Like, we don't have to have that, but I would still like to see them pull these things back together. But Flash movie next, you know, which version are we going to get? That's the question.
Yeah, or a Cyborg. I mean,
But see, that's not even on the, I mean, Cyborg is so far from the table right now, I don't even think that's a thought. Like, Flash is still somewhat quote-unquote in development.
Right. But here's,
you know,
the
where
thing,
it goes, who knows?
That's why I said, like, the expectations are so high that it's like, look back at the MCU, and it's like, it took 10 years to get to where we are right now. And the DCEU has been doing this for, what, four? Would they start in 2014, I think, something like that?
Yeah.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that they have all these movies, and then they come back around and they all get together again. Who knows if there was talk of Green Lantern when Justice League came out, that, you know, that he's going to be coming around soon.
Right.
But
the thing is, that's the comic book reader in us wanting to have all these characters just be friends and always showing up all the time in each other's movies.
Right.
But as moviegoers, do we really need to have it? You know,
oh, no.
Do the non comic book reading viewers, which, let's be honest, is 90% of the people that go see these movies.
Right.
I don't think it matters as much to them whether the characters intermingle or not.
Some of them they don't even know. So it's
right.
You know, but that's fine. I'm just talking about it from my perspective on what I'd like to see and how much fun these are to even just to look forward to and speculate on. I thought, like you said earlier about Aquaman being like, what did you think of the version that they showed, that they portrayed in this one? Because I thought it was a pretty good version of him, and it was like, didn't you say that? What did you say? You said they were like, it was a different version, like a little bit more fun, and I don't know if bombastic is the word, but.
Well, right. Like, so here's the thing. And again, I really like the movie, so don't take this as a knock necessarily, but I don't love the tattooed surfer boy version of Aquaman that we get in the movie, as opposed to, like, the regal king, you know, type, you know, that we get in the comics. That's how I see him being. This is a version that we see in this movie that we've never seen in the comics before. You know, even in the 90s when he had his long hair and beard, it was always blonde. He still wasn't, you know, tatted up all over the place and all of that. And like I said, it doesn't detract for me necessarily, but that's not the version I prefer to see of Aquaman, because he isn't quite as he's bombastic, I guess, in the comics. That's not his character.
So how about this? Have you seen Batman Brave and the Bold? I watched that years ago. So the third episode of that, I went back and found it. DC has it. DC Universe has them all. And when I was watching the movie, I felt like I'd seen this version before. Okay, like, it wasn't unfamiliar to me, and I was like, but I remember him acting this way, but obviously reading a comic book, you don't get that. That would be my imagination. That's not moving pictures, right? You know? So I couldn't think of what it was. And then I'm flipping through the DC universe and I came across that and I was like, I put it on and I watched it. Watch that. It's season one, episode three, Evil Under the Sea, and Batman has to go help him. But he acts exactly like Jason Momoa, to the point that he even throughout the episode, instead of saying like "my man" or acting like crazy and like or those one-liners, he says throughout the "outrageous." Like he'll go "outrageous," and like he's that surfer dude throughout the episode. And I thought it was like I was like, "Hey, that's." And that's kind of what I like. Like, I'm wondering, and that was from 2008. So I'm wondering.
So here's the thing, though. Well, so do we take, so we have a 75-year history of this character portrayed one way, and yet we make our big budget movie with the version of a character you see for 20 minutes in a cartoon that nobody watched? Like,
well, no.
I still don't understand the.
Okay, so let me.
You know, just, like that choice.
Right. So. Aquaman, all these characters, I've been thinking about this too. All these characters, I don't care who it is. It's, look at what they did with, I mean, a lot of people aren't happy with what they did with Superman in the latest movie, right? So they made him darker. He actually killed somebody. People don't like that. They've taken these things and they've taken bits and pieces throughout the history and they've kind of combined to make these movies. Now, granted, with Superman, that was out of nowhere. But...
Right.
There are different like in what was it, the 90s is when Aquaman got the long blonde hair. He had never had that before. There are different incarnations of all of these characters throughout their history just for the reader to like spice it up a little bit. So I'm wondering if they looked at, like, when making this movie, they looked at that, you know, that Aquaman from a Batman TV show and said, let's take that because we can market that version, that fun version. We'll make them fun. We'll give them a modern version of the orange and green suit. And you know what I mean? Like, all of these movies are versions of like a mix of all the different Aquamans or Wonder Woman's or whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's never a pure version when we see it in the screen. Just like the CW. Look at Speedy in the CW. Speedy isn't Speedy. It's his sister. You know? So they take the characters and the people like us look at it and go, hey, they use that name, but that's not it. We're not mad at it. We think, oh, that's different. They did it a different way.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I think that's kind of what they did here. And that Aquaman, that we saw on the screen, that is so marketable. You know, that's a fun Aquaman moving forward.
You're also just playing to the strengths of your actor. I mean, no knock on Jason Momoa, but he's not regal. You know, he doesn't come off as, you know, kingly or however you want to say it. You know, he is a surfer dude. And
right.
So you're playing to that strength too. And I get that, but...
Yeah, but they had to have
this version of the character in mind before they cast him. Otherwise,
correct.
They wouldn't have
That's
gone with him in the
say.
First place.
Right, exactly. I mean, they would have cast somebody else if they went with a different, you know, they would have gone with a blonde guy and had him be, for all intents and purposes, he would have been darker. You know, I think it would, and that's a direction that they probably listen to the fans. They're like, we don't want to go that way. He is going to, and they cast him a long time ago. You know, before the critics were saying how dark the DCEU was, they cast him. And I think between him and, Ezra Miller, The Flash, they can really, you know, they can really bring some lightheartedness and fun to the DCEU.
Right.
Can't mix them all up.
The thing with Ezra Miller, again, not to go off onto another tangent, but the biggest complaint with him was that he was a kid. Well, by the time they get around to making this movie, he's going to be 47 years old, so I guess they don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, no kidding. So, you know Aquaman. You're very, very familiar with Aquaman. What did you think of the story? And, like, give me some background on, because I know you know this story and what they adapted it from.
Yeah, well, it's basically the Throne of Atlantis storyline from the comics. And it's a very familiar story for Aquaman. Now, it was kind of, it had some mashups of some other things because, you know, you had the whole side story with Black Manta. And, I mean, I guess are we going to start spoiling now or...
Yeah, we might as well. We'll get into spoilers here, and at 30 minutes, we did a half hour spoiler free. That's pretty good.
Okay, well, because what I was gonna say is, like, I don't recall in the comics there being that subplot where Black Manta was working for Orm, to try to sow the get support for his war with the surface. That I think is something that was. You know, written in for this movie, and it wasn't part of the story. Now, Black Manta's story and origin is very much straight out of the comics. You know, Black Manta is driven by the fact that he blames Arthur for the death of his father and, you know, wants revenge. So that part of it, again, was very comic accurate, but they weren't part of the same story.
Right. Well, that's what you have to do for the movies.
Well, right. So, like I said, it's a mashup of a couple of different storylines, but the main story with Orm and Ocean Master and, you know, him having his war against the surface and all of this, that's pretty much straight out of the comics, and that's the way it happens. You know, Arthur's challenging him for the rule of Atlantis, and, you know, obviously, being of two worlds, he wants there to be peace between the surface and the... you know, in Atlantis. But what I liked, again, is once again in this movie, we get a villain that is, man, my words are failing me today, but it's like Thanos in a way. Like they have an agenda that is not inherently evil in the sense that, like, what he's trying to accomplish is for the good of Atlantis. And his motivations, now granted, he's power hungry, so he wants to be king, and he's doing things definitely that are not heroic, you know, by, you know, trying to incite war and trying to do these different things. But at the heart of it, he's a sympathetic villain because we can relate to where he's coming from. Like, the surface world, they are terrible to the oceans, right? I mean, we've been polluting for, you know, generations. We're killing sea life. We hunt sea life to extinction, and we do terrible things to the ocean. So he's not wrong in what he's trying to do.
Well,
he's wrong with the way he he's wrong with the way he goes about it. But I think this is really the first time in the DC universe that we've really had that sympathetic villain that you can sort of relate to. And I think that's really what worked a lot for me with this movie.
But I don't feel that I agree with you, but I don't feel that they did a good enough job, and I don't think they were trying to. I think they were just trying to do a fun movie and not get it out. I don't think they rushed it, but... they didn't do a good enough job in portraying how, like, the difference between the ocean and the land. So I get exactly everything you're saying, and it's like, could you imagine? So the ocean is, we all know, is what? Two-thirds, three-quarters of the planet? Right. And the land? We're nothing. Imagine if the ocean is populated like the land is, imagine how many Atlanteans, how many worlds are going on down there that we don't know about. Obviously, this is right. In the comic book, not in real life, people. But
all right.
And then you have, we on this planet, the humans would literally be the minority. And we're polluting their world. So you're right. It's like, I just don't think they did as good a job as they maybe could have. But that's a different movie entirely. You know what I mean?
Well, you're right, because they didn't do a great job of everything that I just said. Like, they didn't really show the pollution. They didn't really talk about the, you know, hunting the whales to extinction and all this stuff. I guess I take that for granted because of my comic book knowledge.
Right. Well, I think they take that for granted out of general knowledge.
Right. They did glance over that to some degree, but, you know, even still, you should be able to see where he's coming from. If you live on this planet, you know, like you said, general knowledge is, you know, that we've polluted the oceans to, you know.
Right. Yeah, and we all terrible levels. The funny thing is we think, oh, the ocean's so big, we can't do any damage. And then this movie comes out and tells you we are. But I think that if they had tried to do that, then everybody would have walked out like that was like a public service thing. That we all would have walked out being mad that, oh, they made a movie telling us about, you know, the environment.
Well, it's a fine line.
It really didn't. Yeah, exactly. I thought it was great the way they did it. But
you do want, I mean, they did show, you know, when he washed up the tides, kind of in the beginning. You know, they did a fairly good job of leaving the pollution behind, and, you know, you got somewhat of a sense of what he was talking about.
Right. And the power, like you said, that I don't they have.
Right.
You know, that
I don't
think
need
that,
necessarily need 35, 40 minutes of the movie talking about pollution, but,
right.
You know.
But you have to take that into account when you think about them and think about, like, what they're capable of. And what, right. You know, what they mean to us, and that we, even though we don't know they exist in the comic book, they gave you that a little bit. Like, we know of the Aquaman, but we're not really familiar with what's going on under the surface. And
well, because they don't relate him to Atlantis. You know, he's just another metahuman that they have come into contact with. They don't.
Right.
Realize that this whole society there that, you know, is thriving underwater.
Right. In the comics, I always was under the assumption he gave himself the name Ocean Master. Because Arthur Curry was the Aquaman, and, you know, the combination of Atlantean and man. But I thought that Orin was he just called himself Ocean Master because he didn't get to be king.
Right. So, yeah, in the movie, they made it where Ocean Master was a title that was granted to somebody that united
all the worlds of kingdoms, correct. If you join all the kingdoms, you get the title of Ocean Master, like you're a great chess player in the water. But
I don't remember in the comics if that was that part. I don't remember because he's just Orm. Like I don't think he went around. Like I don't think he gave himself a supervillain nickname. You know?
Oh no, he did call himself.
He didn't
Ocean
consider
Master.
Himself that.
No, but
they
he
did
called
call
himself
right. He was called Ocean Master as a character though in the comics.
Right.
But I don't know if it was because of the same thing as far as. Relating all the, because in the movie Ocean Master wasn't him as a person; it was a title that anybody could get if they did these things. And
right. If
I don't remember,
king, right,
right. I don't remember if specifically if that's true in the comics or if that was just basically his supervillain name.
Right.
But
I think he just called himself that in the comics to compete against Aquaman, who was king of the seven seas. And
right.
Like in the movie, they took it and they manipulated it to make it like, okay, I need to be Ocean Master to wage war on the surface. And, right. You know, that so that made that sent that in that direction while, you know, Arthur was trying to figure out what he wanted to do. And he wanted no part of it, obviously. I thought they did a great job with that. I thought it was a lot of fun watching him, like, just say, nope, I don't want any part of this. You know, he just preferred to stay on the surface and live his life after what they did to his mother. And, you know.
Well, that's true in the comics, too, to some degree. Like, he never sought that title out. Like, he never really wanted to be King of Atlantis. That was just something, it's what he did. Because of duty and what he felt he had to do and, you know, to try to unite the surface and the oceans. But it was never a case where he wanted just to be king and sought that out for the sake of being the king of Atlantis. So in the movie, that was, you know, they did a good job of keeping that aspect of it, you know, basically true to the comics as well, because... Right, in the movies, he didn't want any part of that either.
Right. So what did you think of the battle scenes?
I mean, I think the... Well, I guess let's define the battle scenes, because I think the only scene that bothered me in the whole movie was the same one that you get in every single DC movie, where you get that big CGI... video game scene where you had the giant crab and the crab armies and all that big thing that I didn't care for too much.
Really?
And I'm not saying it was badly done, but the thing that saved it for me though was that wasn't he wasn't the big bad of the movie. Like having those big CGI fights, really in the end it came down to Arthur and Orm and their battle. So, you know, whereas like in say, because to me that's where Wonder Woman falls apart. Like it's such a good movie until you get to the end and then you have this big CGI boss fight. But that is the boss. That is the big bad of the movie. So that whole ending seems like it's just a video game. Where at least in this it wasn't the ultimate battle for the movie.
See,
taking that out,
I thought the CGI scenes, the ocean, I thought everything they did in the ocean was awesome. I thought it was so much fun to watch them, like, floating in the water. I don't know if you know any of the behind the scenes, like, all their hair was CGI'd in the ocean.
Right, like I said, I'm not saying it wasn't well done.
The battle sharks, the seahorses, the unknown creatures that were armored up. I thought that was like straight out of the comic book. You know, that was a comic book frame brought to life. Some of those where they, you know, they're lined up. You saw that. You've seen that stuff in the past. And I, you know, if you'd never seen it in a comic book, I'd say like, what are they doing that for? Like, he doesn't do that, but that was in there. Like you and I, that's one of the things we talked about earlier is like right after we both saw the movie, we were kind of excited about it. But you had mentioned you didn't like some of the poses. You could have done with a few less of those. And I liked them because I thought they were literally like, let's get that pose like at the end when he's got the trident to Orm's throat and he's got the, you know, he's down on, you know, he's flexing that one leg with the other leg straight out behind him.
Right.
And that Aquaman pose, which is like not only seen it in a comic book, I think that's been like 20% of all his covers. It was just that pose. And it was when they nailed it, you're like, oh, it's kind of campy. But I was at the same time, you're like, that is awesome. It's like because it's right out of the comic book.
Right. I mean, yeah, there was that. I mean, there was a couple of them. It wasn't just that one scene. It happened a few times. I don't know.
Yeah.
To me, that's where it pulls you out. It pulled me out of it a little bit to where, you know, again, this seems silly to say because nothing's realistic about it, but people don't do that. You know, it's like you don't stop and pose once you're done with whatever move you've made, or in the middle of your fight, you don't just stop and, again, like I think I said this to you after I saw it, it just brought me back to Deadpool where, you know, he's making fun of that.
Superhero where, landing, you know, yeah.
Yeah, she jumps off the, whatever, the building, and he goes, oh, here comes the superhero landing, and it's just, it was something to be made fun of, and I just thought, I don't know, it seemed a little out of place to me. In a movie that wasn't supposed to be Deadpool. You know, it wasn't trying to be funny or campy necessarily. It was trying to right. be somewhat realistic. So I just thought people don't do that.
Even when he came out of a man that swims, breathes underwater.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I'm you know what I'm saying?
No, though, I know.
Even
what you're
when he comes out where it's such a great scene, right? And I know they spoiled it by showing it in a million trailers and stuff, but you know, when he comes out wearing the orange and the green uniform, I mean, it's so awesome. But then you get the pose, you know, it's like, here I got to come up and stand. And I don't know who I'm doing this for because it's just my girlfriend and my mom standing here watching me. But I'm going to slam the trident down and I'm going to strike a pose so you can, you know, take the picture for the poster. And it's like, people don't do that. Like, that just bothered me a little bit. That
I love that. People don't do that. Yeah, they also
don't
wear,
they
also don't swim underwater like that. But, So, you know what I liked about it was not the part where he came out, because we've seen that. You know, they gave right. that away. But I liked
Which I wish
that.
They wouldn't have, but they did.
Right. But they did. And, but what I liked was when he was going in. And having seen him already come out in the, or you didn't see him come out, you just saw him standing in that pose. It right. was a still frame, but that waterfall behind him. So when he went in, you're like, oh, here it goes. He's going to go get the suit. Cause you knew going into that waterfall that that's where the suit was. So right. I thought that was kind of fun. And it's funny. My son and I were talking afterwards and we were saying how like, there are people like yourself that don't even like to see trailers. You want to go in
right.
and you want to be surprised. And I said, I respect that. That's fine. But there's also something to be said for how many movies do they mislead you with trailers. So seeing the trailers can be part of the game, because a lot of times you'll go see a trailer and that scene was never in the movie. It was just meant to right. mislead you to set up a surprise in the movie where you're like we're doing with Endgame right now. We're like, what about this scene here? And we are picking them apart, and none of that might be in the movie. Like last right. year with Infinity War, you had the Hulk running across the battlefield. He was never in the movie. The Hulk never
right.
showed
well, go
up
back
after
to,
the opening scene. So, you know what I mean?
Go back
so it's
to
like,
Rogue One. Rogue One, there's an entire trailer that doesn't show up in the movie. So
right. you know? So, my point in that, like when my son and I were talking about it is, so you know the 5-minute clip that they put out that we all laughed about? Like, hey, they put out the whole movie and we get to see the trailer in December? Well, right. That did you ever watch that 5-minute clip? I know you had
no.
said you avoided it, so you still haven't seen it?
No.
Go back now having watched the movie and watch that clip, and it's not the same scene. What you see is Mira running. It's her scene. But when you see it in the movie, it's edited with Aquaman fighting Black Manta. So you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, they gave you a piece of it and it's 5 minutes long. But when you see it in the movie, it's much better. It seems like a lot more action, it's a lot better edit, of course, because it's in the movie. But it's you just see the difference in that right there. And so it's like when you see that 5-minute clip, you're like, oh, that was really good. Yeah, you got excited for it. And some people didn't. They thought it was too long or whatever. But it's like that wasn't the final cut. It's like that piece was edited with the Black Manta battle. So I thought that whole battle scene that they did there in Sicily, that was and coupled with showing that as much as Aquaman is a surfer dude, he's still pretty smart. How he knew, like, you're a king, not a king, not a king. This dude's a king over here. And he's, you know, his dad made him read, learn all this stuff, learn his history. So he's a smart guy. And he could, you know, even Mira was like, how do you know all this stuff?
Right.
You know, and then you go right into how many times did they do this in the movie? They'll have a nice quiet scene. Then all of a sudden a wall explodes out of nowhere. And that's how you start the whole Black Manta scene. With the battle scene, you know, but that Sicily scene I thought was really good. I enjoyed it. I don't know about you.
No, I did. I thought, like I said, I thought all the fights and the battles were very well done. With people, you know, or quote unquote people. Like I said, to me, I just don't always like those big giant 99% CGI scenes. You know, I like to see the human fighting, you know, them fighting each other and doing that stuff. But, and again, not
with
to
an
take
underwater
anything
movie,
away,
that's
those
tough.
Those scenes were very well done. Like I said, I'm not saying that they weren't. The CGI was incredible. The world was incredible. I mean, Atlantis looked awesome. The trench was really cool. Like, all that stuff was really well done. I just, like I said, I don't mind a little bit of it. I just thought once you get to the part where I didn't even mind all the army of the crab people or whatever they're called, but when the big giant crab like comes bursting up under, you know, from the surface, then it was kind of like, you know, I've seen this before and I've had enough of that, you know.
That thing bursting up from the that was the thing that was guarding the trident, wasn't it? That was the creature that
No, because that was more like looked more like an eel to me, like a slithery kind of fish to me, and not so much that big crustacean. I just think that's what Arthur grabbed to ride. You know, that was the Uber that took him to the battle. So
the Uber.
Yeah. And the thing too is like, so did they make the whole trip like underground, like subterranean? So I don't know.
A lot of that stuff I think is going to set up for stuff in the future. Like obviously the Black Manta, all of that is, you know, setting up the next movie. Obviously he's the biggest bad guy that Aquaman has. Other than him, most of his enemies are sea creatures. And issues going on, you know, other than when he's with the Justice League, I mean.
Right.
Black
Manta is definitely his, you know, it's his Joker or Lex Luthor, or, you know, however you want to put it. And I think they did I loved Black Manta. I loved the character. I think they did a great job with him. Actually, what I really liked about the entire movie is just how they embraced the comic book nature of it. Like, they didn't try to take themselves too seriously. They gave Black Manta the big funny looking helmet. They went with the orange and green suit. They went, you know, Ocean Master had his, you know, silly looking mask on.
Yeah, that,
you know,
that
even
was
when Arthur talks
on.
To the fish, you got the you know, you had the circles in the water. So they went with everything that's campy and silly or whatever about Aquaman, and they didn't shy away from any of it. They brought it all in, even to the point where they gave you an explanation for why the helmet looked the way it looked. I loved all of that, and I loved the Black Manta character. Definitely don't mind seeing more of him. Although, again, I don't know that... Like, I think we got just the right amount of him in this movie. Like, if he was the main villain for the whole movie, I don't know where you go with that. So, I don't know that he's going to be the main villain in the next movie, even.
They almost did, like, Black Manta in this movie was like Aquaman in Justice League.
Right.
You know, you got just enough of him to know who he is. You got a little bit of background. You see where they get their their hatred for each other. Well, Aquaman doesn't really hate him. He kind of pities him now. He feels bad for what he did, which I thought was a great character growth of Aquaman there. Like he says to Mira at the end, he's like, look, this is my fault. I could have saved his father and avoided this whole thing. And, you know, that's why Aquaman never, and as you know in the comic books later on, why he doesn't kill anymore. He doesn't kill Black Manta. Spoiler alert, when Black Manta kills his own son. So it's, you know, he doesn't kill anymore. And so they're setting that up. And, you know, with Jason Momoa, I think you could make hopefully like two more of these.
For sure.
Like
I said, we'd have to see where it goes. You know, obviously Aquaman's been around a long time, so he's got other storylines, but they kind of like, you know, I don't know, I'm not trying to be crude, but they kind of shot their whole thing with this movie, right? The biggest story he's ever had is like the Throne of Atlantis storyline, and they led with that. So I don't know where you go for the next movie, but...
Well, you go... Well, depends on where you want to go with movies. You could bring in... Next movie, you go with Black Manta, and you flesh that out more. And then from there, you lead into, like, an Aqualad, or maybe even him and Mira and, you know, Aquaboy or Aquababy. And you go in the third one, you have that actually happen. And... You tell that story, and imagine that. And from there, what if you could do an Aqualad series? They got to have plans going down the road. You know, like, doesn't mean that they're going to happen, but you see what we're doing here. You got to imagine they're doing the same thing.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure they've got them mapped out. James Wan probably has a trilogy mapped out in his head, just in case it did well. But I think that, as much as I like this movie, I think that maybe this should have been what they built towards for movie 2 or 3 instead of necessarily... And again, I understand that they have to have this one be successful, so you want to put your best foot forward right off the bat. But I think when you lead with kind of like his most famous or one of his most famous stories, where you go after that is, you know, could be somewhat of a letdown if they don't, if it doesn't carry the same amount of weight to it that this one does.
The other thing is I think this movie, as you said, did, you know, as you said about the costumes and everything, was really, really brought out the comic book, but I think it also did a great job in promoting Aquaman as a viable character moving forward.
Right.
So with that being said, they might do something that has nothing to do with the comic books in the future.
Well,
you know what I mean?
They
could go in a completely different direction. And we would, you know, we'd just be like, oh, this is something fresh. That's fun too. We don't know. But
as long as they don't cut his hand off and give him a hook, I'll be all right.
Oh God. Yeah, no kidding. I had to put that into my head. But I think the goal of this movie was to make Aquaman marketable, make the character a marketable character that people will be interested in seeing more of. And I think that has been accomplished. You know, and it's for people that are saying, like yourself, even yourself, like, well, they just did the best story. What's left to be said? Well, you could have said, what if they said that 50 years ago about Superman? They're still writing comics about all these people. There's no reason they can't write a more creative story or take another... Aquaman's been around for, 50-something, 60 years?
Yeah, 70
is
plus.
Is it 70? So, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've been writing about him that long, and it isn't the same story every time. So there are plenty of stories out there to be told. I just think that this movie was accomplished in making him... a viable entity and a character that people will go back to see. And now that next story has to be good, because if you just come out with the same old, like, you know, punchlines and kind of like that people will
right.
get tired
of. Right. Well, it can't be a retread. Yeah, it can't be a retread right. of this story.
Right. So, but by the time that comes out, the DCEU will be more evolved by then. You'll have more Wonder Woman. Maybe there will be more of a crossover by then to get, and then people will be more involved then. So it's.
Well, yeah, I mean, who knows? All we know for sure is that we're going to have another Wonder Woman. We don't know that we're going to get any, I mean, we know we're getting Shazam, but to this point, as far as I know, they've made no connection between Shazam and any of those other movies. So.
Right. And that'll
so
blow
all
people
we know
away
for
if
sure,
they integrate
yeah.
him.
Yeah, all we know for sure is that we're getting a Wonder Woman 2. We don't know that we're going to get Flash for sure, or where Batman... You know, we are getting another Batman franchise with Matt Reeves, but there's no details on what or when that's going to happen. So we don't really know what's next for DC after Shazam. Really, after Shazam... We're done until 2020 when we get Wonder Woman 2. So,
yeah.
Well, I guess we get Birds of Prey mixed in there somewhere, but.
Those all seem
really
peripheral
know.
To me. I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We don't really know what this is going to look like, what the DCEU is going to look like by the time we
I
get
think
an
with,
Aquaman 2.
Yeah. With Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa, they have two great staples right there. People, I mean, they're both characters. Actors and characters that people really want to see more of.
Right.
You know? And unfortunately, I think people want to see more of Ben Affleck and, you know, Henry Cavill, but they seem like they don't want to be part of it, which is too bad. Because imagine if they had the same enthusiasm Jason Momoa has. Where would right. the DCEU be then?
Well, I don't know. I mean... You know, Affleck is Affleck, and, you know, he doesn't seem like he really gives a rat's ass one way or the other, to be honest. But Henry Cavill, you know, he's done a lot of work to promote Superman, too, when he was definitely still Superman. You know, we don't know what he is
right.
anymore. But, you know, I follow him on social media, and he's always very active trying to promote this stuff, too. So I don't think, I mean, I think he was pretty into it also. So you definitely had at least the three of them, I think, that
yeah.
were really
nobody.
Know, really
nobody has put nobody's put in the effort and the enthusiasm that Jason Momoa has put, not even Gal Gadot. I mean, it's his has just been I was so impressed with the stuff he was doing all over, you know, because when did they release in China? Like a month ago? And all the stuff he was doing over there and all over the world. I was following him on social media and it, How can you not? The guy's just so right. much fun to watch. And it's like everything he was doing is just it just promoting everything about DC. And
well,
I
made
really
a statement.
Think they hit a home run with him.
He made a statement very recently about Henry Cavill still being their Superman. So who
yeah.
knows? Like
I
know right now he's, you know, Henry's busy doing The Witcher right now. So who knows what's going on
right.
with him. But.
Well, I just got to make sure he shaves his mustache and he'll be good.
Right. But every indication I get from, you know, from following him is that he's definitely very open to coming back to playing Superman again. It's
That'd
just whether
great.
Or not it's just whether or not Warner Brothers and DC want that. You know, and that's always going to be the big question. And then the other thing is time starts to become a factor. It's not like, you know, he's not a super old man, but, you know, you can only wait so long before
right.
they no longer fit the mold of what they've already done. Like, you can't come back now and have Superman 2 unless you are telling a story that takes place 15 years later. Because,
right.
you know, people age. Like, you just can't continue to go on with these things and not...
yeah, like... Like Django
It
Fett.
Made me think about a funny story, and not to get way sidetracked, but we talked about this briefly a second ago, but you know, I'm listening to a Battlestar Galactica podcast, and they made a comment on there where in the 2-hour premiere of that, they had the little kid that played Boxy from the original series. And the reason why he didn't come back to the series when they launched a year and a half later is because the kid got older. And
right.
hit puberty and wasn't a kid anymore. So
right.
the same thing applies even to Henry Cavill. You know, it's like you can't wait till he's 60 and decide to bring him back as Superman. So,
right,
they kind of need to figure out what they're doing if, you know, if they're going to do that with him. And again, not to, you know, I don't want to, we keep getting sidetracked off of everything but Aquaman. So
we're allowed to do that. It's our podcast.
Oh, I know, but I'm just going to say we're over an hour in, so I don't want to wrap it up without mentioning what personally was my favorite part of the whole movie was Mira. Like,
yes,
I thought she was awesome. Like, again, as a comic book reader, she is such a pivotal, strong, powerful character in the comics that, you know, you get afraid in these movies that she's just going to be relegated to the helpless sidekick kind of role. And
right,
they definitely did not do that with her. Like, she is super powerful in this movie. Well portrayed by Amber Heard, but she is the most powerful character in that movie, honestly. Like,
well, here's
in the comics, I've
it.
Seen her take on she's taken on the Justice League in the comics and held her
yes.
own, because like you mentioned, the ocean is 75% or 2/3, you know, whatever it is of the Earth's surface. And if you can control the water,
right,
you're pretty powerful. You know, there's
right.
not a lot there that's going to stop you. So,
right.
I
in
loved,
the comics, she's,
loved her.
This,
yeah.
In the comics, it makes you question who's more powerful, her or Aquaman.
Right.
But
right. That's what I'm saying. She is definitely powerful.
Yes. And in this movie, I thought they did a great job of giving you enough. I think everything you're saying is because you know the background of Mira. I think right. as a viewer, and like myself, I was like you. I'm like, oh, yeah, look at, she can do this. But I was trying to look at that as somebody that doesn't know anything about Aquaman. And I thought they gave enough that she wasn't a damsel in distress. She was actually going to Aquaman like, we need your help, only
right.
because of the title. It's
right.
If it wasn't
Otherwise,
for
I'm
going to
do it anyway.
Exactly. And that, you know, it's like they have their you know, formalities or customs, and she wanted to uphold those.
Right.
But she didn't need Aquaman to fight her battle. But they gave you enough that she was a strong person, she was a strong character, but they didn't tell you everything she can do. It's not, you know what
no.
I mean? It's like they gave you enough that you were like, oh, she's, I really like her, if you don't know anything about her. But say in Aquaman 2, and she really starts to wield her power, you're like, oh, I didn't know she could do that. And
right.
that would be a lot of fun. And I think they did just enough with her, similar to Black Manta. They did just enough with both of those two characters that there's more to come in the future.
Right. Well, and she's got such a complicated story, too. And I don't want to go into all of her backstory in the comics, but, excuse me, there's a lot that goes on with her that they could explore. But, and the reason why I even brought that up is because we were talking about what other potential movies we could get. And like, I don't know that they spin her off into her own movie necessarily, but I wouldn't mind seeing that, because she has enough story on her own without Arthur that it doesn't have to
right.
be told in an Aquaman movie. Like, there's plenty to go on there. Like, they recently this year she got a 6-issue miniseries comics, and Arthur really didn't have anything to do with that. And she had her own story, like I said, independent of Arthur. So I don't know that they'll do that in the movies, but I would love to see that, because I thought they did a really good job. But going back to what you said, yeah, you really got the feeling it's like, I got Arthur because he's the only one that can get the staff or the trident, you know?
Right.
Only the king can get it. If I didn't need that weapon, I don't need you either, you know?
Right.
It's kind of
yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's it. You know, so
right.
I don't know. Like I said, I just didn't want us to wrap it up without touching on that, because I thought she was a very big part of the movie, and I really like the fact. Of course, you always get the obligatory, because you know in the comics they're a couple. So I mean, you get the romance
right.
and you get the kiss and all that stuff, But that's not what her role in that movie was. Her role wasn't just to be the love interest or the damsel in distress. You know, she was a powerful character. Just similar to Wonder, you know, in Wonder Woman, you know, when we talked about that a while back. It's like she wasn't there just to be dressing, window dressing. Like she was, you know, powerful and was able to stand on her own. And I think they did that with Mira also. So,
yeah,
I was really happy with that because that didn't come through necessarily in all of the trailers that was going to be the case.
Right, right. Well, yeah, they're marketing Aquaman, and it's an Aquaman movie. But then when you get there and you see her and, you know, Amber Heard, you know, it's good. It's great. I thought Nicole Kidman as Atlantia was awesome as well.
Yeah.
She survived down there for 20 years. And the one part, so there was one slightly overlooked by, I think, most people, is that she'd been down there 20 years. When Arthur finally comes down, she's got all of that, you know, she's got bones on. She's become this warrior to survive down there. Right. And she had gone after the Trident. And she said, she goes, I tried. I can't get it. I'm not the heir. I can't do it. But when Arthur went in, so Arthur goes into the waterfall, and you see all those bones, and you see all of the corpses of the people that had tried, and you know that creature that's guarding the throne and the trident, it's killing everybody.
Right, well, but she survived.
Atlantia tried twice. Like, it's like, I'll stay out here now. But so, like, she couldn't get it, but it didn't kill her, you know? Right. So it's like, it was a subtle way of saying, like, how powerful she really is. And, I had a question for you. She's the queen. Yeah. She's not dead. Does she relinquish her power to Arthur? Because,
I guess, yeah, they kind of overlooked that too, because I thought the same thing. Well, it's like, if she's back and she's the queen, then she's the queen. You know, so he doesn't necessarily become the king, but I think she does.
My son and I had that discussion. I was like, so can the queen relinquish their power? My son went right to Game of Thrones, and he goes, well, no, because the queen is, you got to give it. I go, yeah, but. I'm like, in real life, you got England, the queen is still the queen, and nobody takes over until she's gone. I don't know if she can relinquish power. I don't know enough about that. And we're trying, you know, he's taking another, you know, fictional character and putting it to this. I'm taking nonfiction and putting it to this. There's nothing saying, I mean, they're not inaccurate. That wasn't my point. It was more that, like, she's like, okay, everybody thought I was dead. All right, I'll just relinquish it. But she's still that powerful. She's as powerful as Aquaman. She's Aquaman's mom, for God's sakes, you know? So, yeah, you have two very powerful characters there that are women. And and then you have Aquaman. And he's the most powerful man.
I'm so stupid that when they finally encounter her down there, and you just kind of see her from the legs, that, you know, they're revealing that somebody else is there by trying to keep you from knowing who it is.
Yeah.
I didn't know who it was. I was like, who is that? Like, is that?
Oh,
I kept thinking
on.
It was like Tula. I didn't. Honestly, I didn't. And like, I was like, and then I felt so stupid afterwards when they cut up to her face and it's like, duh. Like,
she's wearing
the same clothes, you know? She's wearing the same white clothes. All right, so tell me this. Tell me this. She's been down there for 20 years, right? Wearing the same clothes, and they're still white. Like, wouldn't these things be dirty? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
She's only had one outfit for 20-something years. It must be fine Atlantean silk she's wearing. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no. I honestly felt so stupid
after the reveal, but I was like, I spent like 30 seconds trying to figure out who the heck it was. And I was like, why didn't I know that? I thought it was like Dolphin for a minute or, you know, all these different characters from the Aquaman story. And I was like, well, maybe it's her. And
That's not being stupid. That's being, you have too much knowledge. And you were you were so engrossed in the movie, and you're trying to figure out what other character they're going to bring out here. And it's like, I knew I'm like, oh, that's, I knew the whole time that was his mom. Like, before they even went there, I'm like, his mom ain't dead, because, I mean, movie theater, movie making 101, if you don't see a body, they're showing up later, you know?
Right.
So,
I don't know. Like I said, I didn't know. And I was like, oh my God, what an idiot. How did I not figure that out?
That's funny.
So, what I want to know is how Arthur's going to take it when he finds out that before his dad, his mom dated Bruce Wayne, many, many years ago. So,
well, did they really date? She was more of his therapist, really.
What's that?
Did they really date? She was more like his therapist.
Oh, maybe so. No, there was some romance happening there. I'd have to go back and watch that. Yeah, but I think they definitely got together. Bruce Wayne gets all the chicks, so.
Yeah,
I think he definitely did. But but I thought she looked great, too, not to keep bouncing back and forth. But Nicole Kidman was great in that movie.
I think she did
a really good job.
I thought the CGI on the anti-aging thing technique or whatever was not the best I've seen.
It didn't bother me on her. It did bother me on his dad.
Like,
Django? I think he looked, he looked less natural than she did. Like, I thought they did a pretty good job with her. He looked a little off with the CGI, but.
Well, I hope Nicole Kidman's not listening to this right now. I thought she looked less natural in the natural form.
It's really?
She's had some.
She looked better. She looked better with all the CGI.
I was like,
Well, let's hope she's not listening. We're definitely not going to get her as a guest in the future. So.
Well, maybe she could yell at us. That would bring us some notoriety.
Right.
I thought she was great. Yeah. She looks great. I just thought, like, her face, you could tell she's had some work. But and I'm not talking CGI work.
No, I get it. I get it.
But, Django was his Tamora Morrison, something like that.
Yeah.
Tom Curry.
I thought he
looked a little bit. I think most of the men do. Like, even in, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I thought Michelle Pfeiffer looked, she looked
better
a little
than,
more natural.
Michael Douglas. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the men are like, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Because the way they do it, it's like they go in with the CGI and take out the wrinkles, but they take out so many that you're like, when he was young, he did have wrinkles.
Right. He wasn't a porcelain doll even when he was in his 20s.
Right. Like a beautiful woman's like, oh wow, like that porcelain skin. So you can do that with a CGI. With a man, it's like a good-looking man still has wrinkles even when he's younger. Right. You're like, "Oh, I don't know."
Right.
But all right. Is that it? Did we get in enough for you?
I think we covered everything. Yeah. I mean, I think we got it all. So,
yeah. So,
yeah.
It's definitely. I thought it was a great movie. And I think, like we said many times, the best thing you say is they really changed the image of Aquaman for the better, and it makes us, obviously, we wanted to see him anyways, but it makes a lot of people want to see more. I hope.
I hope so, too. I definitely do.
All right. And next week, what do we want to hit? Titans? Is that what we said?
I think, we'll wrap up Titans because we got our last three episodes to talk about.
Last three. Yeah, a lot to talk about there. That'll be a fun one for us. So, all right. That'll do it for this week. You can hit us up on Twitter at @thebrightside_chat. Email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. We're on the iTunes, Google Play. Drop us a line. Let us know what you thought. What did you think, Aquaman? And Who's watching Titans? Doesn't seem like they are by far. That's our least listened to podcast. I don't think a lot of people
are watching the show. They're just not listening to us talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, but they'll listen. We have listeners on everything else. It seems it's just that one. Yeah. Not as many people are interested. It's too bad because it's a good show.
It's a great
really
show.
Good show, but I don't know if it's the app, the accessibility right now. It's just, you know, not. I know they answered their Amazon stuff for you. I just think it's just one of those things where a lot of people are like, oh, it's another app, so they're not into getting yet another app.
Yeah, they don't know what they're missing though.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, not to sidetrack. I know we're wrapping up here, but I'm wondering if like when Disney comes out with theirs and kind of that's the way the market goes. The DC Universe app will have a ton of content on it, and people will, you know, that's when the market changes. Maybe they'll be ready for it. Who knows?
Right.
All right, that'll do it for this week.
All right,
talk to you later.
All right, take care.
Hey, Fred.